And away we go. We're back for hour number two here on the early show on WWGH Radio, Wednesday, September the 11th, 2019, 15 minutes past the hour on what is a very memorable morning for a lot of people. 18 years ago today, almost about this time, horrible, probably the worst terrorist attacks this country has ever seen in modern times. Do want to do a quick programming note here. Tomorrow on the program, live in studio, we're going to be joined by Sheriff of the City, County of Marion, Sheriff Tim Bailey, tomorrow to talk about the recent move that the Sheriff Station made and also other things going on in the Marion community. So 2 hours tomorrow with the sheriff here in Marion County, Tim Bailey, live in studio. And as I told you earlier on, I cannot tell you who it is, but I can tell you when it is. Friday morning at 9:30, live on the air, we will have a special guest who I cannot mention yet, because it's 90% confirmed. I'm almost positive it's going to happen, but I want to make totally sure that it's going to happen before we make the announcement, and it's somebody who has never been on this program before. That will happen Friday morning, 9:30 a.m. until 10 a.m., live on the air. But today we're joined by a gentleman who I love having on this program. Every time he's been on, he brings substance and interest and things for us to think about, and there certainly are a lot of things for us to talk about today, including September 11th. For 15 seasons, he was the star of one of the top syndicated television programs of that day, the Judge Joe Brown Show. What a pleasure it is always to welcome to these microphones Judge Joe Brown. Judge, how are you?
All right. Good morning.
Good morning. Judge, I want to start off September 11th. Here we are, 18 years later. Where were you on September 11th?
Well, let's see. I was, well, on that day I taped. I guess when it went down, I was riding into the studio in a limo. I got there and essentially, at that point, it wasn't clear that it was some kind of intentional activity. It was thought to be some sort of tragedy. And I was watching the events that were occurring after the first strike on the first tower. As we were sitting there looking, the second strike occurred, and it became somewhat obvious that it was not an accident. It was intentional. People started saying that. My reaction was, I don't think was typical. It was, wow, it's finally caught up with us, unquote. And the reason that I had that kind of reaction, well, let's say this. I had a neighbor in a condominium that I was staying in, and he had been from the Middle East, or was from the Middle East, and he had been talking about how proud he was to be an American citizen, but he was complaining about things that had occurred to him because he was not one of the favored people in an area he stayed in. He stayed in Palestine. And he had noted that he had lost several uncles, a brother or two, a number of nephews and nieces. And when they pick up the pieces of the devices that caused the death of these relatives, the fragments essentially said, made in America. And I had made a note about that some 20-some years beforehand when I was in a debate with somebody. And I said, you know, the world's shrinking. There are various communications that we can avail ourselves of, methodologies of communication, transport, and everything else. And we aren't the only ones. And if we don't stop trying to go around and throw our weight around in a violent fashion against certain other people, this is going to catch up with us and somebody's going to get us. So I kind of had a flash on that the morning that it occurred. And that's what seems to have been the case. They started putting it on Al-Qaeda and bin Laden, and then I started referring back to some reports I'd picked up years before that when India and Pakistan were at each other's throats, India at one time had nukes, Pakistan did not, and there was a persistent rumor that a certain Osama bin Laden had been used to pass the engineering plans to Pakistan so they could acquire their ability to use the technology and manufacturing infrastructure that they already possessed to actually make thermonuclear weapons. And then there was a thing that had occurred under the Ronald Reagan administration that indicated that Osama bin Laden was the middleman on the exchange of Stinger missiles with the so-called then freedom fighters in Afghanistan for purposes of acquiring the funds that would be used to finance the Contras after Congress had said, no, this is not to happen, and then the scapegoating of Ali North. And I said, okay, this is one more instance of us having somebody that was working as one of our people and then trying to kill him for one purpose or another. And somebody deciding to say, oh, hell no, I'm coming back to get you. So that's one of those things that, you know, the backstory on some tragic incidents that have occurred in our history. So we need to do better, and we need to get people in charge of our foreign policy and, well, at least involved in it in a significant fashion, who actually have some continuity and some good common sense so that our foreign policy doesn't bounce up and down in 2 and 4 year periods and get inconsistent, and people that we had seduced into being on our side decide to be very much on another side because of what has happened in terms of our interaction with them. But that was my gestalt on 9-1-1 and shortly afterwards.
Judge, there, in the last 18 years, as you said there, that we still need to do better. What did it do in general? We did have two wars that were mostly based in 9-11, Iraq and Afghanistan. We did have the creation of the Patriot Act. Would be interested to get your thoughts on that, being a judge. That still exists today. We did have President Bush standing on the rubble saying, the people who knock these buildings down will hear from us. We all wore flag pins for a long time. What do you make of the last 18 years after the day?
Well, okay. Let's go to Halliburton. Okay. The Bush family has long been into the development of energy, also into supplying intel on an international basis, and what they call paper entrepreneurialism. That last is not when you run a business that is productive and produces anything. Your business is acquiring other businesses breaking them up into their components and selling them all for enormous profit and putting people out of work. Well, Halliburton is interesting. It was initially chartered in Oklahoma in 1919 and went defunct, and then it was rechartered, reincorporated in 1946 by a George Herbert Walker, known as Uncle Herbie, to President George Herbert Walker Bush, and Great Uncle Herbie to President George Walker Bush. There was all of this thing in there about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And, excuse me, Iraq, yes, Iraq. And one of the things that should be kept in mind is that when the U.S. went and made a move on Afghanistan because a lot of elements of Al-Qaeda were there in 2001, they ran into a problem because earlier in 2001, in May, George W. Bush, as what amounted to a bribe, an outright bribe, had supplied them with $45 million in military aid so that Halliburton could be granted pipeline rights in Afghanistan. Most of that $45 million donation was in the form of night vision devices and such high-tech items that are associated with that. So the advantage that the U.S. military had in Iraq in terms of night vision devices was not an advantage they had in Afghanistan with the same kind of things, because we had given them $45 million worth of such devices and associated other devices in May 2001 is an outright bribe. Well, what happened in Iraq was that Hussein had been working on normalizing relations with the rest of the world, which happened. And the UN went ahead and was moving toward granting him the status of being invited back into the civilized world. And Russia and France, meanwhile, had been competing with Halliburton to get the rights to monopolize the exploitation of Iraqi oil. Well, Hussein signed a contract with the Russians and the French, giving them that right. Halliburton got cut out. To make a long story short, after almost 7 years of war, without bid or any further negotiation, Halliburton wound up getting the oil exploitation rights in Iraq. And the last I heard some years ago, that was worth a net, not a gross, but a net of $2.3 million every 7 hours. And Bush and his kin run Halliburton as a legacy thing, along with the Walkers. So it's a Bush-Walker family enterprise. Dick Cheney, the vice president, had been CEO of Halliburton. So some people thought that maybe George W. was flunky to Dick Cheney, but it's the other way around. Dick Cheney was the CEO of a Bush-Walker family enterprise, and they profited greatly by what happened after 9/11. Now, I just put that out there because I can't help but look at such things, and rather than looking at the obvious, I look at the unobvious. And one thing you mentioned about the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, and other things, is what impact that has on ordinary people. Now, frankly, I suspect that the Patriot Act is more dangerous to the American public than what it was designed to prevent. I note that Homeland Security hasn't caught any would-be terrorists trying to hijack airplanes, but passengers have. Now, back to this whole thing about terrorism, international war on terror, we must fight terror, that George W. was so fond of having this smirk on his face as he uttered these words 5 and 6 times per sentence, is a non-starter under the U.S. Constitution. There is no authorization to fight so-called terror in the U.S. Constitution, because even the declaration of war and war powers are envisioned in terms of dealing with a sovereign entity, which Al-Qaeda et al. Is not. However, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution does make it an imperative that the Navy and the Commander-in-Chief do what essentially amounts to the eradication and suppression of piracy wherever found in the world. And you have later in the Constitution the thing that says such treaties as have been ratified by the Senate become part of the supreme law of the land, and we have a number of treaties that have been ratified over the years that declare hijacking airplanes as an act of piracy. So when you had 4 aircraft hijacked 911, that became indicia that there was piracy, and the Constitution mandates, in fact, makes it an imperative that we pursue and eradicate and suppress piracy wherever found in the world. And you can see the fossil evidence of that in the Marine Corps hymn, where part of it says, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. That's from back in 1806, where the U.S. Navy had been revived for purposes of taking on and suppressing piracy after the English. It said, screw you, you have gotten away from us, now you handle your own interest when it comes to protecting your seaborne trade from piracy. So we went down to the to Tripoli in the Mediterranean and thoroughly thrashed the pirates operating out of Tripoli, and threatened the bay down there. So we wound up doing something about it. So when you go get SEAL Team 6 going in after bin Laden, I suppose that's part of having the Navy go after a chief pirate like they did the Bay of Tripoli. So it's tradition, but you see, it made sense instead of what seems to have been used as an opportunity for the Bush family, the Walker family, through Halliburton, to become very much enriched through what was nominally a tragedy for the United States. Now, the other thing that scares me as a former criminal court judge has to do with the fact that I was the last judge to be involved with the James Earl Ray matter. And it became clear, unequivocal, and absolute that Ray did not shoot Dr. Martin Luther King. The weapon that was used to kill King was supplied by our dear FBI. It was under the impotence of a very sick individual, J. Edgar Hoover, who it turns out was actually black, and he and his family had problems with the Klan from having tried to pass for white, which he wound up doing successfully, it seems. That weapon was used to kill King. It was by a 2-man hit team that killed King. It was not James Earl Ray. The shot was fired from the fire station dormitory. It was not fired from the flophouse or bushes. And Congress in 1976 did a lot to take away the authority of a governmental entity to act as J. Edgar Hoover caused the FBI to act, even though they did not implicate him in the killing of King and perhaps others, but it took away the power of U.S. governmental entities to act in an unlawful fashion to do what they thought may have been in the best interest of the country. In the long run, it's usually not. But in any event, they couldn't do it anymore. Now, when you put the Patriot Act into effect, you not only said, okay, what you were doing under the table before was bad. Now we say, because we got scared in the land of the free and the home of the brave, and we're not so brave anymore, and we're on the way not to being free, we allow a governmental agency to do that which used to be illegal to protect us. So it is a bad thing altogether that we have done to ourselves in response to what happened in 9/11/2000.
Do you think in 2019 that we, because there were for a long time colors, I don't even know if that system's in place anymore, the threat level, are we any safer? Did these wars, did the Patriot Act, which is still in place, did any of it make us any safer today than 18 years ago? Could the same thing happen tomorrow that happened 18
years ago? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. See, we've come up, one of the things that they found after 9/11 was the lack of coordination amongst the various agencies. They talk a lot about, well, most of these people that did this were red flag, but hell, my ex-wife used to be red flagged all the time. And I had to get some steps taken to get that from remaining in place, and she's by far no one close to being an anarchist. And I hate to use the word terrorist because that implies somebody's terrorized, and I remember where the phrase came from. It was from Tedder Harris, Chief Air Marshal for the RAF, and Lieutenant General Tui Spots of the United States Army Air Force in World War II, and the theory was is that the German soldier was a very brave and courageous man, and you could not intimidate him, but perhaps if you terrorized his wives and children and grandparents and the general elderly population, then they would do something about overthrowing Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. It didn't work, but the concept of terrorism is an American concept, and it negates the thought embraced in land of the free and home of the brave. So I don't use that term terrorism. I call it something else. I haven't come up with my favorite little phrase for it. But I've seen all sorts of things go wrong when you start trying to profile some person. It used to amuse me that when I would fly from L.A. to Aspen, where I stayed for a number of years during the winter, some clown would always want to come over and profile me, and I'd pull out my reserve cop badge before I even got to the status of being a former judge, a retired judge, and it's like, why'd you profile me? Well, doesn't work that way. So you're trying to save these people on the airport, and I'm one of the people that could help them if something went down. You know, so it's not a very efficient system, and it still does not deal with the fact that most of the inefficiencies have got to do with personal animosities that have developed over the years between this and that person who heads this and that particular aspect of our so-called national defense system. So we haven't resolved that yet. And I think what has been put in place through the Patriot Act is actually more dangerous to ordinary people than anything else. Now, there's one thing that I have to interject here. For years and years and years throughout the country's history, the conflict was between the right and left, with the right trying to implement those things that were previously associated with totalitarian regimes in the name of public safety, and the left trying to resist them. Now, for a number of reasons, we have the left trying to abrogate some of the protections under the Bill of Rights in the name of their little pushed agenda. So if people's feelings are hurt, you can abrogate some of the protections under the First Amendment. For the Second Amendment to be gotten rid of, if possible. The Fourth Amendment, dealing with search and seizure, to be abrogated. And the Fifth, in terms of right to remain silent, et cetera, to be abrogated, so that you can compel someone who is accused of doing some kind of sexual activity that is looked at as a negative, being required to give us a full statement of what they've done. So the right wing is not accustomed to defending the Bill of Rights, but now it is by default the entity that's in the position of doing it. And the left, which was in the position of defending the Bill of Rights, is now the main opponent to that bill. So Bill of Rights. So we've got a real screwed up thing today, and it's dangerous.
We're chatting with legendary Judge Joe Brown. 15 seasons he was on the air, and we have about 20 minutes left here. It always goes so fast when the judge is on, and there are two more topics I want to broach today on the program, and one is kind of frivolous, but it's interesting. It's in the realm of what we're talking about. This week, Jerry Springer launched a program, Judge Jerry. He's now a television judge, if you didn't know. Judge Joe Brown, have you seen the show? And even if you haven't, what do you make of this idea?
I don't watch such things. Quite frankly, I was glad the TV court genre was destroying that obscenity, that general filth known as the soap opera that was corrupting the American public, particularly the minds of a lot of women in this country, and it had done so from the days when it was on radio. That's 80-some years ago. Now, I don't watch them because what was going on was essentially work for me. That's what I did to earn a living, not just in Hollywood as a declared arbitrator, initially under California and then under U.S. law with binding contractual arbitration, but it's what I'd done for years and years as a judge and as an attorney, as the public defender for the city of Memphis and the first black prosecutor that Memphis ever had. So it was kind of just work, so I don't watch it. And I know that for years and years and years, Jerry Springer did this sensationalistic thing that kind of popularized dysfunction. It glorified it. It was an entertainment thing where dysfunctional people became the subject of entertainment. I don't know if he's doing that as a judge show thing, but quite frankly, I'm looking at it tongue-in-cheek because I got blackballed by Hollywood for a long time because I wouldn't push their agenda. And their agenda is not a healthy one for the country. You're seeing a lot of that coming out with some of the scandals that are dealing with pedophilia, exploitation of women, and other things that are not good. So my particular thing was, is I was not supporting that far part of the Hollywood agenda that was attacking manhood, because my mantra was protecting womanhood and promoting manhood, and I didn't like what they were doing because the net effect was going to be very dangerous for women and children. But that's another story. In any event, more power to Jerry Springer if he can pull it off. If they want that kind of thing, they can come back to the original, who kept stepping on Judy's heels, except when the CBS and before that Paramount, that had both of us, would change her rating schedule so she would keep ahead of me. For the last 4 or 5 years, there was a special section under the late Roger King, and that was Judge Judy, Oprah Winfrey, Dr. Phil, and Judge Joe Brown, and I beat Phil and Oprah in the ratings every week the last several years, and I would sometimes beat Judy, but CBS didn't want me to be, as a straight man advocating masculinity, on top of the heap. So if they want that, they could get me. But by the way, I've got a new show coming up. It'll be called Hot Topics with Judge Joe, starting in various Target markets, either February 6th or February 8th, coming up. So we will be talking about hot topics, but from a different slant. So stay tuned for that. But good luck to Jerry Springer if he can pull it off.
Is giving somebody like Jerry Springer, a former mayor, talk show host, the title of judge, do you have any problem with that, or is that just showbiz?
Yes, I do. A number of these talk show, TV talk show, TV judges were never judges. Like, for example, Maybelline Ephraim with Divorce Court. She never was a judge, and they'd conduct auditions and pick somebody that they thought could do what they wanted them to do, which was essentially down men, down masculinity, which is a thing that's necessary for the survival of the public. Not downing it, but promoting it and getting it in order. See, masculinity is a set of behavioral standards that when you input in a boy, you get men of peace who look to the public peace, dignity, and order, and make where they live a better place, but who can be brave and courageous when necessary. You take away masculinity and you destroy the way society inputs its control systems over the apex predator on the planet. It's a bad thing. It's unhealthy. But a lot of these judges were never judges. They were just fake. And you could tell a lot of them before they made a ruling, they would get up and take a recess. That's so they could consult with the attorneys in the back room over what to do. Now, you never saw me do that because I was an experienced judge and Bennett Brown involved in the law for a long time. And some of these people are judicial neophytes. In fact, they're legal neophytes who maybe are out of law school 3 or 4 years, 5 years before they get slapped on a TV program. And it's not a good thing. So that's nothing new. I won't comment any further except to say, you know, more power to him when it comes to making money. And once again, Hollywood is not doing the country any favor by what they're trying to force off on us. Now, if he turns out to be somebody who uses what amounts to a pulpit, that is being on TV to preach respect for law and order and public interactiveness on a controlled in a controlled fashion so that we deal with each other rightly, that's a good thing. If he doesn't and keeps up what he did before, no, that's not good.
Judge, tomorrow night on the ABC television network, we will have the third round of Democratic primary presidential debates. I believe there will be 10 people on the stage this time, and I think there's only one debate. What have you made of the debates so far and the candidates so far on the Democratic side?
It looks like a competition to select chief clown or top clown of the year. I'd kind of exempt Bernie Sanders, but the rest of them are losers. Bernie's not too popular with a lot of the Democratic Party, but it looks like they're trying to have a competition for top clown.
What do you make of somebody like Kamala Harris and being a attorney general out in California when you were out there during some of that period? What do you make of her record and the way she's handling this?
Well, quite frankly, if she had not been successful, she would have been an avid spokesman or spokeswoman for hashtag Me Too. The LA Times detailed a lot of her proclivities to use sex or the allure of sex to advance her career. So I throw that out there because I didn't like it. I have something that has always been a negative about her general professional circumstances, and that is over my 5 decades involved in law, I have learned that if there is one category of people that lacks a lot of the attributes we assign to being good in human nature. It is a career, it is career prosecutors. They're not good people. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and they've been exercising too much power for too long, and they have started playing games with people's lives, so they do not have a real-world perspective. They simply have, I'm going to win this checkers game or this chess game or this card game at all costs, and justice has not been something that they have kept in mind. It's just simply winning. They tend to support vested interest that they look at is the powers behind the votes they get. So it's not a good thing for the general public. Kamala Harris, by her own father's statements or writings, is a liar and a fraud. He is an engineer and a well-educated man, and he wrote a lengthy article that was published in Jamaica that he, where he is a citizen, and but he's not a black Jamaican. He says he had a grandmother that was part black, but that's it. And basically, Kamala Harris is a Hindu Brahmin. Nothing wrong with that. However, considering the fact that we have got a lot of migrants or new citizens from India, there is a great problem with casteism. That thing about untouchability and the caste system that they have in India is being transplanted here. And as a Hindu Brahmin senator, she has done absolutely nothing to protect her own legacy origins. So a lot of the people who have come in from India are now being victimized by the caste system here, and they look to her as somebody to do something about it, and they seem to be quite disappointed that she has done nothing. She's not black. She's taken advantage of the fact that she looks that way because of the genetic makeup of your typical Brahmin. Interestingly enough, the Aryans that the Nazis were putting as blonde-haired, blue-eyed Superman actually do exist, but they aren't blonde-haired, blue-eyed. They look like Kamala Harris. She's an Aryan. So nothing to be held against her for that, but she's faking it about being black. And I have talked to some Brahmin types here in America, and some, or at least one in particular, used to work for the show years ago, and they told me without equivocation how they have deliberately conveyed the false impression of being black Americans in order to get money and funding to go through school. So it's nothing new. But I'm not impressed with Kamala Harris, and in fact, I think she is a threat. I noticed some of the bad things she did in California, and I noticed that from the Bay Area, where she was the elected DA, my in-laws, who were from that area, and a lot of their neighbors used to despise and detest her. And when she was state attorney general for the state of California, California has a unique setup wherein the state attorney's office can block prosecutions by local district attorney's offices, and she took advantage of that to protect some entities that wound up being very large campaign contributors when she got elected to be U.S. Senator. It is early in the morning. I'm still clearing the cobwebs because I stayed up late last night helping a woman edit a wonderful book she's writing. But, you know, I'm not a fan of Kamala Harris. Biden, he's a long-term loser. Cory Booker, we call him a house Negro because he seems to be trying to take advantage of his black status without actually doing anything for the people that he is identified with. And the rest of them, like, they need 10, 15 years of maturity and experience to find out what the devil they're supposed to be doing before they try to become the chief executive in the country. Bernie Sanders, I don't have any problems with Sanders. He's just an anathema to the democratic process, not democratic process, but to the Democratic Party, because he's been an independent. That's kind of in the same way that Trump never was a Republican, but he co-opted and took over the Republican Party. So, yeah, we've got another episode of the contest to select top clown going on with the Democratic Party.
What do you foresee happening in 2020 at this point?
I think Trump will get 4 more years.
Do you think there's any way that he doesn't?
Well, there was a Louisiana governor that spoke on that one time. He said, the press hates me because I do things they don't like, but the only way I'll lose an election is to be caught in bed with a live boy or a dead woman.
So I guess those would be the only two choices at this particular point, if you're not a Trump fan.
Well, yeah, people hate him. But, you know, in my lifetime, I've been exposed to Harry Truman, Ike Eisenhower, and everybody has this, for example, everybody has this image of Eisenhower, of smiling Ike, but in the Army, he had the reputation of having the foulest mouth in the history of the U.S. Army. We have Harry Truman, who most people are unaware of because they weren't alive when he was around or they don't study their history, and he had a nickname, Give 'em Hell Harry. And when he was president, there was one particular episode that would have freaked everybody out today. It involved his daughter, who was a professional singer. Well, this critic badmouthed, so he called him up and told him he was coming over to his office to kick his behind. So he had the Secret Service take him over to this man's office building, and he literally tried to kick the door in, which had been locked and barred, apparently, by the occupant, so that the president of the U.S. couldn't do it. He was coming over there to literally put his foot in his behind. So, you know, these kind of things were commonplace in American politics, but everybody's gotten so nice now that if somebody says something, true or not, that makes other people feel uncomfortable, he's supposed to apologize for it, which I think is a bad trend. The other thing, too, is that the news media has assumed that they can run the country, and instead of being objective in their news reporting, they have an agenda that they strongly push, and Trump stands up to them. So I go, yay, Trump, every time he tells them to go drop dead, so to speak, or he plays Truman and gives them hell.
We only have a couple minutes left, Judge, and I'm going to throw you a long pass here, but this is something that I think is very interesting. The news media, not political, but when they report on anything, even something that will go before a court at some point, they report on it, they put it on every newscast they have, it's now on the website, so on and so forth. Is there any chance somebody who's been accused of something can get a fair trial by a jury that knows nothing about the case?
That is becoming very difficult, and that's part of the agenda of the far left, and it's also part of the attack that they are now attempting to wage in a concerted fashion on the Bill of Rights. It's not a good thing. So it's causing difficulty. And I know 30 years ago when I was on the bench, it was sometimes difficult to get a jury that had not been tainted by what they had read in the newspaper or seen on television. And I imagine that's becoming a very bad thing. And there's a trend now to try in front of the mob and try in the media rather than in court. And I've seen some judges who are not stand-up types, and they have kowtowed to what's going on in the press, which is not a good thing for American justice. I can think of one instance where I was the attorney, and it's been 40-some years ago. It was a young guy, 16 years old, charged with murdering the perpetration of robbery, and they were wanting the death penalty, even though he was only 16. And we got a mistrial, and then we got another trial where I got him acquitted, and then 6 months later, somebody else confessed to the offense. So sometimes justice has to take its course, and what's going on right now looks like tabloid journalism. The things that they want to get interested in, the things that they push and the style they use remind me of what I used to read as a kid on the last column in the newspaper, on the last page of the last section. It was a salacious gossip, and they had what was known as the gossip column. Now, what it was, the gossip column, is now front page in most newspapers, or the equivalent thereof, and what you see on TV, Fox, CNN, and such like, and it's not good for the Republic.
Judge Joe Brown has been the guest. It's always a pleasure, Judge, when you make time for us. I thank you for getting up early this morning after a late night. We always learn something, and I hope you come back in the future.
Okay, thank you. It's been my pleasure anytime, and maybe you'll catch me after what wasn't a hard night so I don't stutter.
Okay. Thank you, Judge.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Judge Joe Brown, you can't beat that. Now, tomorrow on this program for 2 hours, 8 to 10 a.m., Sheriff of Marion, Tim Bailey, and then Friday morning, the special guest, who I'm not going to tell you about yet. Charlie Evers has got a great show coming up from 10:10 to 12 noon today in about 10 minutes, and then A Progressive Life with Glenn Coble from 12 to 1. Stay tuned for much more local live programming here on WWGH Radio.
Question, but, you know, I didn't get to finish. Again, it was my, I really wanted to give him the opportunity to address all critics, but I think I'm surprised that his people haven't prepared him for questions like when these issues are at the forefront.